Welcome to The Dolan Diaries, a show for creators of all stripes to think deeply about their art and its place in culture. My goal with this show is to encourage you to gain clarity, movement, alignment, and focus. You are a leader, whether you know it or not. Will you claim your voice and speak truth? Let's crush fear, stop complaining, stop comparing, drop the excuses, and take this creative life seriously. I'm your host, Jeff Dolan, and this is episode 13 with my guest, Adam Edson, where we talk about how to figure out what we really want and why what we think we want is too shallow. All show notes will be at jeffdolan.com/13, where you can also subscribe to the written version of this show. My guest today is Adam Edson, founder and chief visionary at Rare CrossFit in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and the season 2 host of the Mentee podcast. Adam is a certified level 1 CrossFit trainer and competitive ultra marathon runner, and quit his comfortable corporate job to start his gym 10 years ago. I wanted him to come on the show today because he truly exemplifies the empathetic leader. He always brings value first to people, and he's the kind of person you want to have in your circle. It was a pleasure to hear him mentor folks, including myself, on season 2 of the Mentee podcast. We get into some deep conversation that hopefully nudges you just enough to take some action to better yourself, so be prepared.
Jeff, what's going on, brother?
Adam, how are you?
I'm awesome, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, you too, brother.
Appreciate you taking this time with us.
No, man. Not a problem at all. Not a problem. Anything to add value to you, brother.
Tell us a little bit of your story. I know that you had shared, you know, previously with me about your story, but I want to get kind of the full story, and I'd love to hear how it's changed a little bit since you started.
Okay. So I'll try to make that quick, Jeff. So, you know, growing up, I came from a broken home, but had a lot of love for my folks. But with that, I struggled not having a father figure for a lot of my life and hated going to school. And in fifth grade, on the playing dodgeball one day out on the courts, and I had a bully break my left forearm. And that had a really big impact on me. I'm a little guy, 5'5", right now, weigh about 145 pounds, and, you know, 44 years old, so I was very little growing up. And I didn't have much confidence. Then after that, you know, my confidence just went in the tank. It was not good at all. And it just made my feelings of going to school even worse. So my brother, 2.5 years older than me, he had gotten into strength training and weightlifting. And a couple years later after that, when I was in seventh grade, he actually, you know, invited me in to have a workout with him and a buddy of his at the time. And from there, man, it kind of changed my whole perspective on my own self-confidence, my own self-image. After about 2 to 3 months of lifting weights, you know, I started getting, you know, these little bicep muscles. being bullied was had stopped pretty much, and I was able to kind of, you know, take care of myself. So from a long story short, you know, from that moment, it meant a lot to me about the impact of, you know, exercise and feeling good about yourself and how that helped me mentally, not just physically. And here we are, I mean, a little bit more than 30 years later, and here I am. I've owned a gym, you know, for this. Actually, we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary coming up in October.
Congrats.
So that's kind of the journey I've been on. And, you know, there's a lot of the stories in there from me jumping from leaving a high-paying six-figure government contractor job after I graduated from college to leaving all that with 4 weeks paid vacation, 11 holidays, sick days, everything else, a 401k. I was 3 classes away from my master's degree that my company was paying for. And I left all that to pursue my dream of, you know, hey, I want to open up a fitness facility to help people change their life. So,
wow. Yeah. And so that formative story when you were younger, that really kind of carried you even till through today.
Oh, yeah. It still has an impact on me to this day. We were literally, some of the things we have coming up, some of the events and stuff like that, and programs we're doing here at Rare CrossFit. We literally, yesterday, were talking about the impact of, you know, me being bullied and lacking confidence growing up. We're every year we do 1 or 2 instructor training programs to bring on new coaches and staff at our facility. And last night we had the a meeting with these people who have applied to raise their hand and said, hey, I want to be a part of the RARE team. And those were the stories, you know, we talked about and the vision and the mission of what we're trying to do. And, you know, they could see the passion of, you know, why we've worked so hard to get where we are right now.
So how long did it take you to use that story or find that story in your past? Like, was it something that was always on your mind and it kind of shaped your whole life? Or is it something that you had to kind of realize about yourself to find your why and give you that push to get out of that comfort zone that you were in and become an entrepreneur and open your own fitness facility?
It took me a while, Jeff, to find my own why. But as I looked back on it, you know, there are stepping stones in my life that realized, you know, hey, this is really what I want to do.
Right.
The first, you know, being again, you know, I grew up like most probably of your listeners out there, you know, your mom and dad supportive, but, you know, hey, go to college, get a degree, get a great job, and live a great life. And I did that. Graduated, and a buddy of mine helped me get my first job out of college, and it was great. You know, I got a job working at the National Reconnaissance Office, the NRO. It's really neat stuff. And then got transferred and got a promotion and started working at the Pentagon for many years. But wow. I live here in Virginia. And what started for me going up the road to a job of an hour commute ended up being like some days like 2.5 hours one way. And it was probably about 8 years of doing that job that I realized, like, I'm not meant to be going to a job, make good money, and sit in a cubicle all day. That's just not me. And yeah. Over this time, I got into running and had run some ultramarathons, including my first 103-miler and things like that. And it was after some of those and just realizing that my life was whittling away, driving up and down the road. Like, literally, Jeff, for me, I would get up at 4 a.m. every day, Monday through Friday. I'd drive to work one way, which up to some days was 2.5 hours. And then I'd leave work, same thing, stuck in traffic. Mm. I'd get home Friday nights at like 5 or 6. I'd go to the gym, have dinner with my girl, sleep in Saturday, work out, do yard work, and maybe have another night out. And then Sunday was laundry, ironing, meal prepping and stuff for the week. And I'm like, I hated that life.
Yeah.
I'm like, this sucks. So, and I really had to look back, you know, hey, what is it that I love to do in my life? And it all related to fitness and actually helping people, inspiring them, impacting them to do the things that made them feel good. And most of that was the foundation of exercise.
Right, right. That really comes through. And I would love to share the clip of your podcast where you're sharing that story of that ultra marathon, because I think that's a great story.
So in 2008, I decided to run this 100-mile race. It was in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, and my friends, my family, they all thought I was crazy. Have any of you out there ever set a goal where your parents, your friends, your family, they said to you, literally to your face, you're crazy. What are you thinking? This race, it was called the Grindstone 100. It was a trail race, had a 38-hour cutoff. It started at 6 p.m. on a Friday evening. You had all the way till it was either 8 or 10 a.m. Sunday morning, 2 days later. This was not your average race. Again, since I was a kid, though, my gut has inspired me, told me what I should do. And my gut, at this point in my life, it told me to sign up for the toughest race of my life. And I was determined to finish it. One of the ways I made sure I'd be successful was I enlisted the support of the people that trusted and cared for me the most. I reached out to my mom, my fiance, and my good friend Ray. I asked them if they'd be willing to do something, and frankly, I wasn't sure if they would do. I asked them if they'd be willing to take 3 days off from working and come to this race and meet me at the halfway point, at the 50-mile mark, to make sure that not only did I get to the halfway, but then that I had that accountability and that support for the second half. This was a major ask, but I was that committed to getting this result. It mattered that much to me because I knew if I could finish this race, I could accomplish anything. And so I made that ask and they said yes. Now, even though my folks, my fiance, and some friends thought I was crazy for signing up for this race, they were still there to support me. They literally took 3 days out of their life to invest in me, and I try to help with my own success. I was so appreciative of that. I mean, I can't explain to you guys. Can any of y'all relate? Anyone in your life that's taken not one day, not 2 days, but 3 days out of their life to travel with you, just to support you, to help you get through something, something you knew would not be easy, something you knew that you would struggle with? That's what they did for me. So 6 p.m. rolls around on this Friday. Honestly, the race started perfectly. I was feeling awesome. The weather could not have been better. It was about 60 degrees, clear skies. I thought to myself, what a perfect night to run 100 miles. The first 9 hours of the race were pretty quiet. No problems. And my body, it was holding up pretty well. You know, I really can't complain. At this point, I had run a lot of 50 miles. I'd run a lot of 50Ks, couple marathons. I was used to running, and I was used to running trails as well. But about 40 miles into this race, the wheels started to come off my wagon. And I was in serious problems, serious trouble. I'd been running with a buddy, and we crested this mountain, and we met up with another guy, and this guy was walking. My buddy and I, we decided to take a walk break with this guy, just let our legs rest for a little bit. And my buddy was feeling great. At this point, I was feeling so-so. This other guy we met with, well, he wasn't doing well at all. And we tried to give him some confidence to help him out. My buddy decided to go on. Me, on the other hand, well, I decided I'm going to walk a little bit more. I'm going to rest a little bit more because I wasn't quite feeling it at 40 miles in. And this guy, oh my God, negative mindset. Negative, negative, negative. He told me at the next aid station he was going to quit. That set a seed in my head of like, huh, I feel like crap. I'm not feeling good. Maybe I'll quit at the next aid station too. I tried to get that thought out of my head, but honestly, I felt so crappy. My body hadn't felt pain like that before. My feet were swollen, my stomach was turning, and my mind, honestly, it was all over the place. One minute I felt happy, and the next minute I felt depressed, and I felt lonely. And I had this guy here saying, yeah, I'm just going to drop out this next aid station. You know, no big deal. I've done it before. I had never dropped out of any race I ever entered, and I had never quit any race. If I had to crawl over a finish line, I would have done it. It's amazing, though, when you're not feeling well, when you're going through the struggle, when you're going through the pain of what your mind does to you. So we ended up getting to mile 43, this aid station called Little Bald Knob. And at that aid station, this guy, can't remember his name, he did. He dropped out. He quit. And so did I. Ah, devastating. I mean, I still remember that to the day. I remember right now walking up to that tent. There were two people there. It was a red tent. They had a fire going. They had food there. It was so warm and cozy. And I took my bib off and I quit. The struggle got worse. There was another problem though. My family and my crew, the people that invested in me, they took 3 days out of their lives to invest in my success. They were 7 miles further down the trail at the halfway point at 50 miles. Because there was no crew access at 43. The first time you saw your crew was at mile 50. That's where they had access. That's where I could pick up a pacer to help me finish the last 50 miles. So from 43 to 70, that 7 mile walk, it seemed like an eternity. One foot in front of the other. Think about the most tired moment you've ever felt, and you're putting one foot in front of the other. And all you want to do, the only thing you want to do, is crawl up into bed and just go to sleep. That's how I felt. I remember getting to about mile 49 in the race, walking. And at this point, I'm on the Blue Ridge Parkway. And I crested the top of this hill on the road. And then it dipped back down and then came back up on the other side to another hill. And I saw this person on the other hill is probably a quarter of a mile away. And this person, their arms were waving, and I could hear a faint voice. I was so tired, I couldn't make out who it was. But as I got closer, I knew exactly who it was. It was this little short lady, about 4'11", white hair like a cotton ball. There was only one other lady I knew like that, and that was my mom. And as we got closer, I walked up to her. She said cheerfully, "Hi, how are you doing, sweetheart?" And I had this lump in my throat, and it took me everything I had in me at that moment to say to my mom, "I quit." And she looked bewildered. Her smile from ear to ear, it went to a look of concern. You know, when your parents, your mom, they look at you and they're wondering if you're okay, they're not sad or upset with you, but they truly have a look of concern on them. That's what my mom looked like. She looked worried about my well-being. And I said, "Yeah, I quit. I just couldn't do it." And she said to me, she says, "Well, why? What's wrong? Are you okay?" And I told her, "I just couldn't do it, Mom. I just couldn't do it." We walked together for the next half a mile, and we got to my crew. There waiting for me was Lee, my fiance, my dad, my best friend of 30 years, Jimmy, and my good buddy, Ray. Ray was the guy who got me into running just a few years previous. This guy lived 3.5 hours away from this race. He had gotten up at 1 a.m., drove 3.5 hours through the night to get to the 50-mile point, the halfway point of this race, just to put on his running gear and to run the last 50 miles with me, to invest in me, to make sure I got over the finish line. Man, I mean, it's still hitting me to this day. I didn't have to just tell my mom that I quit. I had to tell my good friend that I quit. I had to tell my fiance that I quit. I had to tell my best friend and my dad. So not only did I let all these people down, the number one person that I let down was myself. I have never felt lower in my life. I remember standing at the start line 30 minutes before the race in 2010. I was chatting with some other running friends, and something interesting happened. 30 minutes before the start of this race, this one guy, he said to me, "You're not going to finish this race." Let me tell you something. Have you ever had somebody get you right up in your face and say to you, to challenge you and let you know that you're not going to do something? I already had a fire inside of me from 2008 that I was going to dominate this race, that I was going to conquer it. And after this, somebody I thought I knew, somebody that I thought I trusted, doubted me, told me I couldn't do something right before the biggest race of my life. That fire was stoked, and it only raged from that point forward. So the race for us, it went pretty much the same as it did in 2008 from the beginning. That was until mile 15. Yeah, not mile 40, mile 15. We were running through the trails. Things were going great. It was another beautiful night. It was about 60 degrees again. Clear night. You could see the moon, all the stars. We had just crested the top of this long 3-mile climb. And we started running down the other side of this mountain. And I heard crack. I had stepped on a tree root and my left ankle rolled really bad. And about a second later, I said to myself, "Not again. I cannot do this again." And I'd say for about another 500 feet, I didn't walk. I kind of hobbled as we were hobbling down this mountainside. And my right hand was on my buddy's shoulder as he kind of braced me. And my mind started racing as we were walking and hobbling. And I said, "Oh no, this cannot happen. Not now, not this race. Was I going to drop out again?" And I had a come to Jesus moment. The struggle had just gotten exponentially worse. From me quitting in 2008 And now it was in my head, oh my God, I have to run another 86 miles. Not fresh, but on a sprained left ankle. How am I going to do this? So we just kept moving. That's how. I focused on the race, not the pain. How do you eat an elephant? Have any of you heard that quote before? You eat an elephant one bite at a time. That's how I was going to get through this race. One foot at a time, one step at a time, one foot in front of the other. That's how. And all of a sudden, we were at the halfway point. We were 50 miles in. I was at the same point I was in 2008. And again, my mom, my dad, my fiance Lee, my best buddy Jimmy, and my good buddy Ray, they were all there waiting for us. This race is in the bag. I got this. The next 30 miles from 50 to 80, and I got to be honest, at mile 80, my ankle, I could have just asked somebody to cut my foot off. It hurt so bad, I thought about quitting at 80. We left aid station 80, and we started this long 4-mile climb that went up the side of this mountain. We got up halfway up that mountain, and I remember there was this little stump just on the side of the trail. In this trail, these trails are skinny, where you can barely fit both feet on them. And I said, dude, I've got to sit down and take a break. My foot is killing me. So we did. I sat down there for probably 2 or 3 minutes. We took a little bit of a break. It is amazing in these races. These races, these ultras, it's like life, guys. The struggle is real. It is like, it's not a day in your life. It's not a week in your life. It's like going through a month of your life, of the struggle, the ups and downs of what your days look like consistently. We have good days. We have bad days. The struggle is real, but you get knocked down and you get back up. That is the point. That is the key. You get knocked down, but you get back up. The people who are willing to get back up the most are the ones who are the most successful. And we made the final aid station at 95 miles. And at this point, we were about 26 and a half hours into the race. I knew in my heart I was going to finish this race. And Lee, my fiance, she finished the last 5 miles. And when I finished, she just kept saying, and I didn't remember this, you don't know how I feel. My ankle felt so bad those last 5 miles. I kept saying over and over, you don't know how I feel. You don't know how I feel. And she was basically like, shut up. Let's finish this race. Come on. Get your head out of your butt. And I did. And coming up to that little hill in the grass with that finish line banner and then collapsing on the ground, laying on my back. It was about 30 degrees out at this point. And I just laid there, just recovering, enjoying the moment. And honestly, I felt like vomiting. My stomach was turning. But I made it. And I have all of those people, my mom, Lee, Jimmy, my dad, and my good buddy Ray, to thank you. I appreciate you guys so much. I've never forgotten that day. The reason I share this with you is because every single one of you who's listening to this has something in your gut telling you, you were meant to do something. What is it? I ask you, what are you actually marching towards to accomplish? What are you wanting to accomplish today? If you looked in the mirror, would you be able to look yourself in the eye and say, I'm doing it and I'm giving it my best?
Are you tired of running your own online ads and want to outsource it to competent professionals? Are you just catching on that the ROI on, say, a Facebook ad is still super affordable right now? Before the big box brands arrive and drive the cost up on the little guys? Maybe you want someone to run your LinkedIn, Instagram, or Twitter ads for under $250, $500, or even $1,000 a month. Then make the crew at AdWave your new friends. go to adwave.tv, that's adwave.tv, to browse the affordable ad packages today. Yeah, that was a great story, and kind of summing up your passion for it, even through all the pain. And
yeah, there was a lot of pain there.
it's inspiring, right? Because I think a lot of the breakthroughs that people have, and I'm kind of realizing this myself, is, you know, you have to push into that pain and that discomfort to really have a breakthrough and make those hard decisions like you did.
Yeah, you do, man. I'm sure a lot of people listen to your show, and even you've been there, I've been there. You don't make massive changes in things in your life like being comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and it could be like, you know, hey, it could be the first new car you bought. It could be a gym membership. It could be the girl you wanted to ask out at the bar, right? You were uncomfortable approaching her about asking for a date. Being uncomfortable and doing the things that make you feel uncomfortable are what pushes everybody to have breakthroughs, to really like make life-changing instances and stuff to have impacts on your life.
So when you were in that corporate job and you were, you know, telling yourself like, I need to get out of this, or I need to find a better lifestyle, how were you able to kind of get from there out of that? Like, what was it, something that happened, would you say, from the outside in that happened to you that forced you to kind of make that change? Or was it something that you, and maybe this is related to your fitness and pushing into pain, something internally that happened that pushed you to say, you know what, I have to make this change from the inside out?
It was definitely from the inside out, brother. And again, over my experience through everything I've been through, the change only happens when you start from the inside out, like true change. And for me, it was just really thinking back. Like, I would drive in those days and be sitting there in traffic, and I'd ask myself, like, what am I doing with my life? Like, I literally felt like, you know, everyone's traveled down the road and they see that 18-wheeler that goes by with all those cows on it, or the pigs getting ready to get slaughtered. And that was the image I saw every day. I'm like, what the heck am I doing? Is all this stuff worth it? And I had like about, it was a good year of thinking, you know, man, what am I going to do? What can I do? And my thought was, I really want to open some type of fitness training facility, but not like a Globo gym. Something to change people's lives. And I really didn't know, and I stumbled upon it, but it was truly thinking for a year. And I started throwing out some ideas to like my fiance and to my family about, you know, hey, I'm not really happy, blah, blah, blah. And they all thought I was really crazy. None of them were supportive, meaning in the way of, nobody said to me, hey, I'm listening to you, that's a great idea, go for it, I got your back. Wow. Every one of them,
yeah.
And not in a bad way, it was just because they weren't willing to make a change like that. They kind of did the 9-to-5 work stuff. They weren't doing what really made their heart sing.
Right.
So,
and that's tough. I mean, that is probably one of the number one things that holds people back, right? Because you value their opinion, and then when they're not super supportive, you kind of say, well, maybe that's not a good idea, and maybe I need to rethink this, and you start questioning, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what's funny about family and those close to us, Jeff, and everyone listening, think about this, because I know we've all done it, and I still do it, and I try to catch myself. Those closest to us, we put such a high value on their opinions of, if we ask them a question or run an idea by them, right? We would think they'd be supportive. But on the flip side, who are the people in our life that we complain to the most or first to lash out to?
Yeah.
It's normally those closest to us. Like, shouldn't we flip that switch? Shouldn't the people closest to us be the ones that we should be able to have these transparent, open, honest conversations, no matter how crazy the idea sounds? Shouldn't we be able to just talk to those closest to us? And shouldn't they also be able to be like, hey, yeah, let me listen. I know you need somebody to talk to. Let me listen to you, and let me openly think about what you're asking and saying, and let me give you some open feedback. So we kind of poop on those closest to us and lash out. But then on the flip side, we don't trust them or want to tell them our craziest ideas because deep down we think they won't support us.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a tough dynamic because, I mean, I've been on the other side of that where, you know, somebody has told me an idea and I think the initial response is, let me help you. You know, let me tell you all the things that could go wrong so that you, you know, don't get caught in that or don't, you know, make the wrong decision or whatever. And you think that it's from a loving standpoint, but it's really just crushing their dreams or at least not encouraging them in the right direction. A lot of times. And it's so sensitive too, because, you know, when you share something like that, when you share it with a loved one, it's like, I just need you to encourage me right now.
Yeah, give me a little bit of love because right now my confidence is in the crapper.
Right.
I just need a little bit, inject some confidence into my self-esteem, please.
Yeah. And then when they don't, it's like, oh. But I think that's what was great about, you know, us, both of us kind of, I think you before me, but we joined the Inner Circle, which was Jeff Wood's kind of mastermind group of folks kind of in the same position in life to encourage each other. And I joined originally because I knew I needed to be around people that I could share stuff like this with, and I wouldn't get that kind of tough love feedback, you know?
Yeah.
And it was refreshing to kind of talk to other people that, you know, it's funny, I would share with my wife, you know, oh, I've got this idea, and she just look at me like, great, but that's, you know, what's reality, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We got bills to pay, baby.
Right. Or she would just be like, go talk about that with your, you know, guy friends, or like, that's, you know, don't talk about business, you know, here, like, just go somewhere else, you know?
Yep.
And not all the time, but I mean, enough of the times where it was like, wow, you know, I need to find a group that I can just talk about this with in an open way. And so did you kind of realize that as well, where you needed some kind of other group or mastermind group outside of your immediate circle?
Yeah, it was that precisely, just somebody or a group that, you know, trust is a good word for it, but it's more than that. It's almost the people going down the same road as you, because most of the other people in my life at the time didn't understand my thought process and really what I wanted to do. So it's almost like, I tell a bunch of my athletes in my gym, you know, look, if you want to become a great golfer, are you going to go hire a track coach? You know, if you want to become a great bowling person or whatever, you know, are you going to, you know, go hire a real estate coach? No.
Right.
So you need to surround yourself with people, you know, who are thinking the same thing. So, you know, if you want to start your own business, get around some business owners, get around some entrepreneurs. If you want to be a computer programmer, you're going to go hang around computer programmers.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, but I needed that group of people. And, you know, it's kind of like me. I was the first person in my family to go to college and graduate. No one in my family ever went to college, you know, but they pushed me to go to college, but they hadn't.
Mm.
So it's funny that you said that. Yeah. Cause you need to surround yourself with others who are like-minded.
Yeah, and you don't. I guess it's logical. It makes sense, but I don't know why we don't immediately go there initially.
That's a good. I know it's a good question. Why is that?
Yeah,
maybe it's because we don't know how to seek those people out.
Yeah, well, it's tough. I mean, it's tough to when you're in a circle. It's well, I guess it's easier today with the internet. You should be able to do that, but you know, it is. It's a different mindset to be reaching out and providing value to others, and, you know, kind of getting in the mode that we got into, that we learned, which is kind of just a different way of thinking, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you bring that up, Jeff, because that is one of the biggest things I learned over season two as the mentee host, and just being around, you know, Jeff Woods, people like you, and being a part of the Inner Circle, that, you know, the things you want in your life, if you start thinking about them, journaling them, writing them down, they will start manifesting in your life if you want it that bad. And I'm a firm believer in the quote, you know, life will give you what you ask of it when you're ready to receive it.
Mm.
You know, right now we're 10 years into our business with the gym, And I am more excited now than I ever have been over this journey. And it's amazing the things that the clearer I get on what I want, the more things that are showing up with that vision. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, my morning routine, really working on myself, journaling and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, getting back to your original thing about people struggling to, you know, how do I find that person? I think you have to have some time for yourself to think about, well, what is it that you want to do or who is it you're looking for? You know, if you want to be a gamer and go to Japan or Korea and be a professional gamer, Google local gamer hangouts or meetup group. You know what I mean? Like, famous quote from Jeff Woods, you know, when your head's inside the box, you can't read the label. Like, pull your head out of your butt or the box. You know, I'm serious.
Well, and I think that stems from if you back up a little bit, what do you want is a hard question.
Yeah.
I was talking to Natalie, the new mentee host, and we were talking about this concept of, I think a lot of people want too many things. And so, or they don't know what they want. And it's hard when you don't know what you want to hit the target or get somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Because you're either running in so many different directions that you'll never get there in your lifetime, or you just don't really know what you want, so you're just taking whatever comes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, maybe I'll do that. Well, maybe I'll try that. You know, the shiny object syndrome.
Yeah,
it distracts you because you don't really have something that you want that you're like, all right, I'm doubling down on this. This is what I want. I'm going after it.
Yeah, it's very, most people's wants are very superficial.
Right.
They think they know what they want. Like, let's just make it easy. If you posted this podcast episode, the title, Jeff Dolan interviews season 2 host of The Mentee, Adam Edson, learn how to make $1 billion. Right there. Oh my God, I got to listen. I'm going to make $1 billion because I want $1 billion. Well, what is that? What is that going to bring you? Like, I want a Lamborghini. Okay, great. You know, what does that bring you? Like, we're all have, I'm going to call it for me personally, like shallow wants. Like,
yeah,
really? And trust me, I've been there and I still, you know, have things like that, but it makes me think about, is that really going to make me happy? Mm. Like, I mean, I was at the gym here yesterday at 5 a.m. and I left the gym last night at 9:30. And felt awesome.
Wow.
That's what being an entrepreneur is, that you love what you do.
Yep.
It's funny, my stepfather, John, and thank goodness that my mom found him and married him, because without him, I probably would not have gone to college. He's been a massive influence and impact on my life. He used to tell me all the time, Adam, if you find something you love to do, you'll never work a day in your life. And I know people have heard that before. Do something you love and you never work a day in your life. And it's really true, man. Really true. Like right now, Jeff, my salary is really what I made just getting out of college. And I could give two craps about it, man.
Yeah.
Because every day, like I'm sitting here on a show with you because that's what I decide to do. I want to connect with you and try to add value to you and your audience and whatever. I don't have to do that. It's a choice, though, that I'm making consciously.
That's right. Several years ago, I had to kind of deconstruct how I thought about goal achievement, which was, you know, I grew up in a military family, right? My dad was a Marine pilot, jet pilot. And, you know, there was a lot of discipline and order and in my family. And, you know, if you wanted something, you would set your goals, set your strategies, objectives, you know, you would go after it. It's very clear, very, you know, I'm going to get from here to there. And then when I had to deconstruct that thinking, I had a counselor kind of to walk me through, like, okay, what are you feeling in once you get there? Like, what is your, who are you around? What kind of work are you doing? What do you feel like? How are you interacting with people? What is your surroundings? You know, what do they look like? You know, are you doing something? Are you sitting? Are you standing? Like, what are you speaking? Like, what are the things that you're doing? What do you feel like? And so reconstruct your environment when you actually achieve the goal. And so, for example, for you, it might be, you know, you're in the gym, you're around your closest friends and colleagues, and you guys are improving yourselves and working out and feeling good and getting those endorphins going, and you're directing people, and you're leading, things, and you're speaking, you're doing podcasts, you're doing, right? Like, you would construct this, like, this is my ultimate, this is what I want. And then what he said was, work backwards from there and make sure that you can do the things in your life and become the kind of person where that becomes your environment.
Yeah. And that is great how you describe that for people. Cause that goes back into as well what you just said, hey, what's that long-term goal? So that gets into that want, which a lot of people struggle with. And then unless they take time to think and self-reflect, which is so important for most people, but we're so distracted nowadays that people don't take the time to think. But most people think their lives, what they want is sitting on the beach like in the Corona commercial, sitting next to the nice-looking girl with the beer in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that commercial is like 30 seconds long. So what are you going to do with the other, 23 hours and 59 minutes and 30 seconds of your day? There's a lot to do in a day.
Yep.
I honestly believe through our journey, your journey and mine, what I've noticed in mine is that people are honestly scared of the answer and scared to admit to themselves that, because we all hate to what? Not know. Mm. Most of us hate having uncertainty.
Yes.
And I don't know if this relates to you, Jeff, but I know for me, Lee, my fiance, my girlfriend, one of her things is certainty. Like, we went to Tony Robbins last year, and he talks about, some of the things, the qualities or the characteristics people want. And one of hers was certainty. So for her, like, she really struggles with, she wants to know, what's going on later today or tomorrow? Like, what are our plans?
Mm-hmm.
And I think many people, I don't know if your wife's like that, but many people, I believe, struggle with things in life because they just want somebody to give them an answer.
Right.
And what we talked about when we first got on the show was the struggle. We only grow from learning from, failures or doing stuff like doing something and say, hey, I really liked that. Or, no, I really didn't like that. That sucked. Let me do something else. But a lot of us don't want to go through that unknowing and some of that uncomfortableness of, man, that chick at the bar, whew, God, she's the hottest girl I've ever seen. I want to go ask her out, but it would just suck to be turned down. So I'm not going to go ask her out. Like, just go do it. What do you got to lose? It's funny. I always said with that, I used to go up to girls all the time, and I always said to myself, I'd probably never see this girl again. So what do I have to lose? Go ask her out.
Right.
And I think if more people do that, don't worry about having all the answers. Don't worry about having certainty. You don't need to know all the answers. Put out there what it is you want. Manifest what it is you want in life, and life will start showing you those things that you truly want, because you're going to start eliminating stuff that you don't want by going down the road, going down the journey.
The other side of it is we might not know what we want necessarily because we've never been there, but we have an idea about it, right? We have the we have the commercial of what we want in front of us. So we're watching the Corona commercial, right? We're watching the Gary V's of the world or whatever, whatever we think, Tony Robbins or whoever, right? Mother Teresa, Billy Graham. Like, we're looking at these people and we're like, man, even on Facebook and Instagram, we're watching the trailer of people's lives. We're like, wow, they're so beautiful, talented, whatever, successful. And we're like, man, we want that, but we don't necessarily define or know what that's like once you're there. And, you hear a lot of times people say, oh, and once you make, millions of dollars, okay, what now?
Yeah.
I still got to put my pants on in the morning. I still got to, take the kids to school. I still got to, do all the things that I did yesterday. So what really changed?
Exactly.
What happened? I was supposed to, all this stuff was supposed to happen. Well, let's deconstruct that. And actually, it's funny. There's a story that is a good example of this in my life. So, when I was younger, I played in, rock bands, and I played bass, and we were in high school, and I thought, man, wouldn't it be cool if we could make it big and go on the road and play for a living? And, my parents were always like, yeah, that's great, Jeff. Keep studying.
Yeah.
You know, and I always got frustrated with that. I was like, man, no, like if I'm serious about this and I set this as my goal, I can make it happen. So why are you telling me to, you know, not care about it, or it's just a side thing or a fun thing? And of course they were just looking out for me, but it's funny. My entire high school through college and even into, you know, my early career, I thought, man, that is what I want to do. I want to be a full-time musician. Even though my actions didn't really back it up, it was always something kind of in the back of my mind that was like, yeah, yeah, I want to do that. And then all of a sudden, the guys that I grew up playing with, they quote-unquote made it. And they were, yeah, you know, touring the world, and they were rock stars, and they were doing the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And they needed a bass player, and they had lost their bass player, and they called me up, said, come to Nashville, like, try out, let's do this thing. And it was just one of those surreal moments where I kind of went, uh-oh, Batman. You know, this is God and giving you what you want or what you think you want. Let's see if you really want it. And I got to go on the road with them for, you know, a while, and it was very, very clear to me, and I knew it. And when I looked in their eyes, I think they knew it too. This is not what I want.
Yeah.
And it was very clear, and thank goodness, because I always tell the story looking back, like, if they would have said, Jeff, you're in, I would not have been able to say no. Even though I knew it wasn't the right thing, it wasn't what I wanted, and it wasn't, you know, meant to be, but I don't think I could have said no. So I think the best thing that could have happened was for them to say no.
Yeah, because and then for the next 5 or 10 or 20 years, you wouldn't be thinking about or regretting a decision that you never tried.
Right. And I think that's kind of the kindness of God, I guess, because he wanted me to see the lifestyle and just, but I guess what I'm saying is like, I was able to take what I thought I wanted and try it on.
Yeah.
And really live that lifestyle and really go, you know what? This is not what I envisioned. I actually like creating music, writing music, recording music, not playing it on the road.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And it was just an eye-opener for me. And then it was like, all right, well, man, okay, I can now move on.
Yeah, then that's great. You know, not everybody's got to be Metallica or Eddie Van Halen, who's playing his guitar every single day.
Right. Totally, totally. So yeah, that was kind of a good example. And I think, you know, reflecting back on that and just hearing other people's stories, you definitely hear people that think they want something, but then their actions don't back it up. They don't actually take actions towards that or even figure out how to try it on, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's cool what you said there too about not only did you notice and recognize that, okay, this isn't really what I wanted, your buddies in the band too, they saw it too.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, it gets into that self-reflection again. If we just step out of our own comfort zone and take our heads out of the box and really look at your surroundings, and when you're in a group setting, like when you're doing something you love and really want to do, people can see that.
Like, so true.
If you're a car salesman, right? People are going to see if you love selling cars. If you're a gym coach, trust me.
Oh yeah.
We've had great coaches and bad coaches, and that all falls back on me as the owner. But man, we've had coaches that have been phenomenal, and we've had coaches that had all the knowledge in the world, but they couldn't be empathetic enough to train somebody that needed to lose 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. They could only relate to the athlete that wanted to go to, you know, the local competition.
Yep.
And in our eyes, that is not defined here at Rare as an amazing coach.
Right.
So, yeah, like everything, it is amazing. If people just took 5 minutes a day, man, be quiet and ask yourself that, what do I want to do today? If I could wave the magic wand, you know, people have heard this before, if money was no object, what would I be doing right now? And most people get paralyzed by that question.
Yep.
And that's just amazing.
So what are some things that you would suggest folks do that are in this spot where they're trying to grow, they know they need to go after what they want or be kind to themselves and stop suppressing and stop, you know, blocking themselves. They need to get out of their own way. They need to stop giving excuses or looking to everyone else for approval. What is some advice that you would give for folks in that position?
That's a great question, Jeff, and I love that. And I think that question that you just asked is the first question everybody should be asking themselves. And over my journey now, which really the entrepreneur journey, I'll be flat out honest, we've owned our gym for 10 years now. And I just told you at the beginning of the show, I'm more excited now than ever. And we're 10 years into the business.
Mm.
Probably 4 years ago, I started going down the road of really looking at my core values, like what's important to me. And you got to remember, so I was 40. And you read any business book, and they all, most of them talk about find your core values. What's your mission? What's your vision? What are your core values?
Right.
And that's where I think everybody has to start and really take an honest, hard look at that and spend some time in that. You're not going to do it in 1 day or 5 minutes. And let me give you just a quick example. I say this, and I actually said this last night at our instructor training meeting for this next group of individuals. We're training to be a part of our RARE team. What are your core values? What are those 3 to 7? And I don't mean I'm a hard worker. Okay, well, define that. What does that mean to you? But if one of your core values, Jeff, is you're a hard worker, and if I'm lazy, our relationship is not going to work out. Whether it is, think about it, whoever's listened to the show, your boyfriend or your girlfriend, your family members that, you know, are your blood, your friends, if one of your core values is hard work, I want you to ask yourself now, think about the family member, the friend, or your significant other who's got a lazy, like really is lazy or content. How is that relationship with them?
Yeah.
I guarantee it's not stellar.
Mm.
I guarantee it. But that's the importance. But we don't put enough like weight or ownership on like, you know what? Like, I'm a hard worker. I want to surround myself around other hard workers who don't complain about their job.
Yeah.
But that, what's, you know, that's the easiest one I can think of. From a core value standpoint, or you could, you know, you could be like this, like, hey, one of mine is respect your elders. My mom raised me as respect your elders and work hard and make great choices. If you've got friends that every time, you know, you're in a shopping mall or whatever, you're out and said, hey, that old person, get out of my way. You're so slow. Like, do you really want to be hanging out with that person?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's
and
great.
That is,
that's good info.
That is probably the biggest thing I've learned. But we do not take time to really ask ourselves, like, what are my core values?
I think because it's just hard, right? Like, because you hear all
yeah.
that kind of stuff and it sounds a little woo-woo and, you know, well, you're the CEO, you're the big guru. And then you don't take the time to actually do it. You don't
yep.
actually sit down and be like, all right. Because the second it gets a little hard, you're like, well, shiny object.
Exactly. And we don't put the onus. So to be honest with you, man, that's where I started with mine, and that went deeper into, so for me, a couple of those were, you know, being humble and respectful.
Mm.
And okay, so what does that mean, Adam? So, you know, part of my core values now is I want thriving relationships. I want to wake up each morning and help somebody live a life of purpose.
Mm.
I want to inspire and impact others and influence them to achieve what's possible, and anything's possible. Elon Musk just sent a freaking car into the space with a dummy in it headed to Mars. Anything is possible right now.
Right.
We're only limited by what we believe, and we're only limited by how much self-reflection we take.
Hmm.
Seriously,
good,
like
good stuff.
People should, after listening to this, they should take 5 minutes and really start getting down the core values. I was coaching a friend of mine who owns a business, and he's had his business for many years, and he has some similar goals as we do. And I asked him literally for 3 weeks straight. I'll just call him John. John, let's work on these core values. And we went through exactly what you and I just did. And 3 weeks later, he still could not give me his core values. And I told him, I said, John, now you're wasting my time. We're not going to work together anymore. Because if you tell me you want your business to be a $1 million revenue business, and you can't even tell me what your core values are, how do you expect to hire the people that are going to believe in your vision? Mm. How are you going to go to a business and say, hey, I'm going to provide this service with you, but I don't even know what my core values are?
Oof. Accountability hurts.
Yeah,
but I tell you what, though.
You have to.
You have to get accountability. And I think that's the second step, right? Is once you have that self-awareness and actually do the work, the inner work, to figure out what your values are, what do you want, all of that, the next is like surrounding yourself with like-minded people that can actually hold you accountable and that you can be vulnerable with, that you can share your ups and downs and say, hey, you know, I screwed up on this, I didn't do this, but hey, they dust you off, they pick you up, get back out there, man, let's go. And you feel great because you respect their opinion and you want to,
exactly.
You want to help them, they want to help you. It's just it's a really cool thing that happens. And then, but without that accountability, I mean, I just listening to the second season of the Mentee podcast that you were on, I mean, it was eye-opening because I know how hard you work and how disciplined you are. And then some of those calls where Jeff Woods would just get on there and be like, okay, so did you do that?
Yeah, it's hard.
And
man,
that accountability and the vulnerability that you had to just be totally out in the open and be like, man, I didn't get that done this week.
It hurts to admit that.
Yeah, I mean, but it was very, I think it was very helpful to hear that because it was something that, you know, we can all relate to, right? And, yeah. And it just spoke to the importance of that because on your own, without that accountability, you're back in your comfort zone. You're not going to change.
Yep. Yeah. And it's funny, Jeff, because, you know, Jeff Woods too. You know, Jeff is my mentor and helped me through season two. He created the Mentee podcast, but, I still quote it. You know, I remember him telling me, and he said this before, that, you know, Jeff's partnered up with, Jay Papasan and Gary Keller, the two who wrote the book, The One Thing, and Gary Keller has, you know, the largest real estate company in the world. And I remember Jeff telling me, you know, hey, look, I have a coach, Jay has a coach, and Gary has a coach. And last time I checked, you know, Gary's a billionaire. he has somebody that puts their finger in his eyeball every week because they need accountability too. We all slip. We all drift.
Yep.
And like, man, people, yeah, you need to find somebody in your life who can give you, who can have open, honest conversations with you, who can hold you accountable, but not in the sense of, hey, Jeff, you know, you're a jerk. Why didn't you get that crap done, man? I mean,
right.
Come on. You're
not a drill sergeant. Yeah.
Exactly. Empathetically coming from a place of value. And yeah. Trust me, when you find that person, it may take the listeners a while to do that. It's awesome because you get energized from the accountability. Like, mm-hmm. You don't feel like a beat down.
Right.
It's funny we've gotten on this subject of accountability, Jeff, because this is true story, and hopefully this ad value listens as well. Lee and I, you know, again, my girl, we've owned our business for 10 years. We're the co-owners. And if I could go back from day one, I would have found somebody. I would have gotten my core values done, period. And then I would have found somebody that I trusted and respected that would put their finger in my eyeball and hold me accountable.
Yeah.
And down the road many years, I realized, like, you know, holy crap, it's just like me. My stepfather, until him, I had nobody in my family that I could say, hey, I'm going to go to college. Can I, like, lean on you? Like, how is it? How's it going to be? What should I expect?
Right.
I had no idea. Mm. Well, when I started my own business, I didn't go find an entrepreneur or someone who owned a business. I had nobody to lean on. So here I am with this massive ego of, like, I'm just going to work hard and I'm going to make this business do it. Oh my God. What an idiot.
But that's how so many of us think, though.
Yeah. So it was years in and we finally hired a coach. But here was the problem. Lee and I both knew we needed a coach. I found one. She couldn't stand him.
Yeah.
Did we learn a lot? Yep. Did it put a strain on everything? Yep. Would I have traded that going down the road at that point in life for what we learned? Nope. But boy, it was uncomfortable for years.
Wow.
And then we got another coach, and it wasn't, you know, it's expensive. Now, though, in our life, who we have now is a business coach, one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. And it's one of the reasons, like, just one of the reasons I'm so excited for our business right now. And Lee and I both love this person. We respect him. He's added so much value.
Awesome.
It's amazing. But we wouldn't have known that had we not had a couple of other bad experiences.
Right.
Which, yep, truthfully was our fault, because Lee and I never came together and said, hey, what do we think we need for the business? Lee, what are your core values? What are my core values? What are our values for our business? And what do we want to do?
Right.
It's so important, Jeff.
Absolutely. I mean, even in marriage, I mean, even in relationships, I mean, you have to know the other person's values. I mean, basic communication, right?
Yeah. Do not ask the person out that you know is lazy if you're a hard worker, or, you know, do not ask the person out who does not work out, or, you know, like football, if you're a sports junkie. It's probably not going to work out. And months down the road in that relationship, your buddy's going to be like, hey, dude, how come you're not hanging out with us anymore? Well, the old ball and chain, you know, I can't do anything anymore. We all beat ourselves up, man. It's so easy. What do you want? What do you want?
Yep. Well, Adam, this has been so fun, and it's been a pleasure catching up with you and hearing your story. And I hope the listeners get a lot out of this. So just to sum up, we all want something in life. It is very hard to understand what that is a lot of times. So we have to be self-aware enough to spend the time and do the uncomfortable inner work to figure out what our core values are, figure out what we're all about, surround ourselves with like-minded people, and find accountability to help us get there.
That's right, baby.
Cool. Well, Adam, I know you're a busy man, got a lot going on, so I'm going to let you go, but thank you so much for spending time with us today.
No problem, man. Good luck, brother, and hey, if you need anything, let me know, brother.
I will. Thanks, Adam.
Right, have a great one, brother.
Okay, bye. Thank you so much for listening. I have been Jeff Dolan, and today is Sunday, May 6th, 2018. Please download the Anchor app, find this show, and click the message button to call into the show with any questions or comments. I would love to hear your voice on the show. You can also subscribe at jeffdolan.com or on your favorite podcast platform, and I encourage you to share this with any creators in your life. Have a good week, be kind, and take care.